FM, Valley Free Radio, Northampton.
That's great. It starts with an earthquake, birds and snakes, an airplane. Lenny Bruce is not afraid. I have a hurricane. Listen to yourself. Turn world serves its own needs. Dummy, serve your own needs. Beat it up an ox, speak grunt. No strength. The ladder starts to clatter with fear. Fight down. High wire and a fire representing seven games in a government for hire. Fury's breathing down your neck. Team my team reporters battle Trump, tethered crop. Look at that, no plane. Fine, then, uh-oh, overflow. Population common food, but it'll do. Save yourself, serve yourself. World serves its own needs. Listen to your heartbeat. Dummy with the rapture and the reverend and the right. Right, you patriotic, patriotic. Slam, fight, bright, light, feeling, pretty sight.
It's the end of the world as we know it. It's the end of the world.
Slice and burn, return, listen to yourself churn. Lock it in, uniform and book, burning blood, letting every motive escalate. Automotive centering, light a candle, light a motor, step down, step down. Watch your heel crush, crush, uh-oh, this means no fear. Cavalier, renegade, steer clear, a tournament, a tournament, a tournament of lies. Offer me solutions, offer me alternatives, and I decline.
It's the end of the world as we know it. It's the end of the world.
Mr. Banks, birthday party, cheesecake, jelly bean, boom, you symbiotic, patriotic, slam, button that, right?
Greetings, Earthlings. It's the return of the Wolf Enviro Show, minus some sound effects, proving yet again it's Koyana Skatsi, a world out of balance, thanks to industrialized human-centric society. But hey, we can evolve, right? Right?
Yeah.
Maybe you can.
We left our screaming man and our laugh box in the studio, I think, 2 weeks ago, and now they're gone. So if anyone has seen our Screaming Man in our laugh box, you know where to send them. Valley Free Radio on 40 Pine Street, Florence, Mass. Come home. Anyone who stole them, it'll be forgiven. You can leave it anonymously, right?
No questions asked.
Rewilding or reintroducing displaced species may be part of the solution to Koyana Skatsi. We have a conversation with Rob Edward, Carnivore Recovery Director of Wild Earth Guardians, which is what, a hybrid of...
A hybrid, I like that, yeah. Yes. Yeah.
Of Sinipu and another outfit.
A couple of Western groups joined together recently, and Rob, indeed, I'm sure, can explain that.
Yes. Of course, we'll always find time to bash Bush. We still have that. And the Empire. And we'll check out the Enviro Show Echo Chamber, and Quote of the Week, as well as a call from Tom Nielsen, not on the road, we think. But first, it's time for... a special return of the Wolf Enviro Show, Revenge of the Critters. We're going to jump into the Wayback Machine for this one. Are you ready, kids?
Going way back.
Mr. Tyler tells of two rough experiences he had with a wolf up near the head of Sugar Orchard Creek. Quote, "One day in the early part of April 1861, said Mr. Tyler, I took a position behind a log which lay near this spring to call up a gobbler. I had called a half an hour or more without getting a response from a turkey, but something else came in the shape of a big black wolf. The animal was in 15 feet of me before I knew of its approach. You ought to have seen me bounce up on my feet with gun in hand. I thought at first that it was going to run, but it changed its mind and turned broadside to me and looked me straight in the face. Quickly aiming my gun at it, I shot the wolf through the body. It fell as if dead, and I congratulated myself that I had escaped a tussle with it. But I was elated too soon, for Mr. Wolf got up, and after staggering around a few seconds, seemed to recover its equilibrium, and with a fierce, savage look and a growl, it darted at me. Of course, I turned to give it room, and being in a hurry, I fell sprawling over a log, and the angry beast leaped over the log at me. I was so terrified that I did not take time to rise to my feet, but ran on my hands and feet. The wolf followed and snapped at me in a vigorous way, but did not take hold of me. While on my hasty retreat, I noticed a tree leaning against another tree that I could easily climb, and I made for it. And when I got to it, I went up as fast as I could. Getting up high enough to be safe from the wolf, I stopped and looked down at my enemy, and he was standing looking up at me, and I saw blood dripping from the bullet wound. The wolf stood still for about 10 minutes, when it seemed to grow sick and tired, and turned around and went away. Some several minutes after it disappeared from view, I descended the tree and recovered my gun, which in the excitement of the moment I had left at the log. After reloading the gun, I followed the trail of the wolf by the bloodstains on the leaves and ground, and after the animal went near half a mile, it entered a cave. But I did not thirst after the wolf's blood strong enough to go in and hunt for it.
Thank God
for
that.
The cave appeared to be too small for both of us, and I did not call any more turkeys that day either.
Well, that's good.
Wow. All right. On to the Enviro Show Quote of the Week.
Oh, wait.
Are we ready for this? Again, we're going to get in the Wayback Machine for this one.
What's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. Stop. What's that sound?
Hang on to your seats, folks. We're still in the Wayback Machine. This is from Aldo Leopold from the essay Thinking Like a Mountain. The cowman who cleans his range of wolves does not realize that he is taking over the wolf's job of trimming the herd to fit the range. He has not learned to think like a mountain. Hence, we have dust bowls and rivers washing the future into the sea. Close quote. Aldo Leopold.
The point of that is that the wolf would have done that for us had we left the wolf to be part of the environment.
The balance.
The balance of nature would have taken care of it, as it would with so many things that we have destroyed.
What's that?
Yeah.
We have a song, Los Lobos. Will the wolf survive?
Thank you. cry. But he'll find his way by the morning light.
Our guest, Rob Edward, Carnivore Recovery Directory, Director of Wild Earth Guardians. Can you hear us, Rob?
Yes, I can.
How are you?
All right. Welcome to the Enviro Show, Rob. I'm Glenn.
Thank you.
I'm Dio.
And I'm Jean.
Wow, you're ganging up on me.
Yeah, three against one.
We want to know something about your work.
Well, I'm here to tell you something about it.
Good.
So tell us who you're working for and give us a little history of the group that you are working for now.
Yeah, I am working for a group based in Santa Fe, New Mexico, though I work in the Denver area of Colorado, called Wild Earth Guardians. And it's a relatively new organization, at least in name. We were formed in the beginning of 2008, but we're the result of a merger of two long-standing organizations working on conservation issues in the West, Forest Guardians, based in Santa Fe, and Sinopu, which is a carnivore restoration and protection organization based in Boulder, Colorado. So those two organizations merged, and we're now taking on a very broad range of wildlife protection, endangered species, and habitat protection issues in the western United States.
So I just have to, you know, stroke my ego a little bit here, Rob, if you don't mind.
No,
you,
go ahead.
You worked for a while for Sinopu.
Uh-huh.
And I just have to point out to our few listeners who might be listening that I was one of the founders, one of the three founders of Sinopu, back in the late 80s out in Colorado when I was a grad student out there fighting for wolf reintroduction in the Rockies. So, and I'm really happy that the organization flourished and is continuing on with the fight.
And we're proud to do that legacy forward, and we'll continue to fight for the good of wolves and the wild here in the West for generations to come.
Yeah, it makes me feel great to know that.
Yeah.
Right.
And interestingly, just as a side note, I actually have a little bit of history in your neck of the woods there in Northampton and Lawrence, Massachusetts, when I was working with Jonathan Levitt.
We've had him on the show.
Yeah.
Yep.
Reagan
back in the early 90s, before I came to Sinopu, I was rabble-rousing out there for the Greens and also working at the New England Aquarium.
Excellent.
Mm-hmm. All right, so there's some good news in the world of wolves from this lawsuit for the Center for Biological Diversity. You guys all celebrating about that?
Certainly something to celebrate, at least in the short term. The Center for Biological Diversity and several other groups banded together and filed a lawsuit against the federal government over their plans to strip wolves of their legal protections in the northern Rocky Mountains, so basically Wyoming, Montana, Idaho, et cetera. Excuse me. And the victory that was gained in the last few days was that the judge ruled that it was appropriate to forestall stripping wolves of their protections while the merits of the case were considered. In other words, he put an injunction on the order to strip wolves of their protections. So at least for the time being, wolves are back under the umbrella of the Endangered Species Act and can't be legally shot. In the 3 or 4 months since wolves were taken off of the endangered species list up there, over 100 had been killed legally by people with guns and traps and whatnot. So we think that this is a very good sign that at least the judge is going to take it very seriously in terms of the threats to the species.
Yeah, Rob, I read that decision, and it was a great, I thought, a great decision. You know, very well reasoned and well documented, and you know, said basically that the chances were very high or probable that the people would prevail in their lawsuit on the merits. So
indeed,
it was a really good decision.
Yeah,
I imagine that the Fish and Wildlife Service is feeling kind of dumb at this point.
Well, you know, this is an interesting milestone in a long history with the Fish and Wildlife Service and wolves, and it leaves a lot of us in the conservation community shaking our heads because this, in fact, is the second time the Fish and Wildlife Service has been beat back in their effort to take wolves off of the endangered species list. The first was back in the 2005 range when they proposed taking wolves off the list essentially nationally through a scheme of gerrymandering the lower 48 states up, and was soundly defeated. And so they then came back in late 2006 with a new plan, which was to make the gerrymandering a little bit more defensible by making the areas they were going to delist smaller. But the bottom line is that wolves presently occupy less than 5% of their historic range in the lower 48 states. Less than 5%. And yet the Endangered Species Act, that great law that Congress passed and President Nixon signed into law, says that, in fact, species that are listed are then supposed to be recovered throughout all or a significant portion of their range.
Right. Yeah.
How is it that 5% is significant when 95% is still unoccupied?
Yeah, that's a great point. And I think that that's, you know, really the heart of the issue is that these species are being brought back only to the point of biological annihilation, you know, and just teetering on the edge, and they call that recovery.
Exactly.
But what is this Bush administration separate decision which would allow the killing of wolves even if they're returned to the endangered species list? What is that about? That is an attempt to destroy the whole idea of endangered species, isn't it?
Well, the Bush administration has gone through a variety of different machinations to try to get at the Endangered Species Act in total, as well as particular endangered species that are listed. Wolves are of particular importance in this battle because they are such a wide-ranging species and have such powerful enemies, in particular the agricultural lobby. So the bottom line is that here we have a particular administration working through various means to both legally, in other words, through the proper processes, take wolves off the endangered species list, as well as to essentially illegally circumvent the act by telling the Fish and Wildlife Service through the Solicitor General of the Interior Department that the definition of significant portion of range, you remember I just used that phrase a few minutes ago, was to be essentially set aside or defined as loosely as possible such that there was no meaning to it, and therefore that they could justify any action they wanted to either take wolves or any other species off the list, or refuse to put species on the list.
So how are wolves doing in Colorado?
Well, presently, to our knowledge, there are no reproducing population of wolves, but it's a long battle, one that I've been working with through Sinopia and now Wild Earth Guardians since 1994, to push the federal government to develop a recovery plan and ultimately to reintroduce the species. Clearly, what's going on to our north in Wyoming doesn't bode well for any possibility of wolves migrating down here in sufficient number to recolonize the southern Rocky Mountains on their own. We do think that we've had some individual dispersing wolves. In fact, we know of at least one because it was killed on Interstate 70 west of Denver a few years ago, and we know it came from Yellowstone because it had a Yellowstone collar, radio collar on. So we know that wolves can make it down here. We know that there's some permeability to the landscape, but in order to recover the species to the region, we really need to do a mechanical reintroduction.
Rob,
while that sounds complex, it's really not. Wolves, unlike a lot of other species, are extremely easy to reintroduce from the pure mechanical, logistic, biological end of things, as long as they've got enough to eat and enough human tolerance.
Rob, when I left Durango back in 96, that there was talk of repopulating the San Juan Mountains, and I thought things were almost in place for that. What ever became of that program?
Excuse me. Well, again, it's one of those things where the local rumor mill would have you believe one thing, but the reality is that, in fact, the federal government had made no moves to move forward with a recovery plan and reintroduction yet. In fact, at that period of time, they were actively working on their first draft of the plan to take wolves off of the endangered species list nationally. So this is a multi-decade battle, and the only way that we can win it is to get more and more people involved. And, you know, there's so many global issues to be concerned about, both environmental and social, but the one thing that I would tell somebody living in Northampton, Massachusetts, is wolves are important to your children and your grandchildren. Wolves are important because they are the engine of evolution in all of the Northern Hemisphere and the places where they evolved. They have, in fact, sculpted the very landscape that we see. And that is being proved out by science. We are seeing just in a very short period of time in Yellowstone, after having put wolves back, that aspen and willow are regenerating at historic levels because elk are moving around again and aren't browsing all of the young aspen and willow shoots down to the ground. And when you have more aspen and willow, you have more songbirds present because they have more stopover habitat, and you have more beaver able to create dams, and that has implications for the water cycle and water purification, and in fact, probably the fisheries, because the water is cooler when it's deeper.
Right. We're going to be getting into this after our interview with you. We're going to get into some of the situation in the Northeast with wolf reintroduction. But this whole idea, the concept of wolves as a keystone species, can you elaborate more on that?
Well, some scientists would take issue with the use of the word keystone with regard to wolves, but it's been historically applied. I would say more that wolves are disproportionately important. They are a flagship species, and they are an apex species that has a top-down regulatory effect upon everything else in the system. Everything from the density of the vegetation, as I was talking about earlier, to the density of other carnivores. When you have wolves in the system, you have fewer coyotes per square mile, for example, because they directly compete with coyotes. They, in fact, kill coyotes. They keep the coyote population in check. When you remove wolves from the system, coyote populations go through the roof, and they, in turn, have effects on other lower-level carnivores, such as foxes and skunks and raccoons, etc. So a system without its top-level carnivore is a system out of balance.
Exactly. You still there?
Yeah.
All right. So in terms of the legal logistics, where is your group at now in terms with Wild Earth Guardians in terms of what needs to be done legally and what do you need from people who are in solidarity with you?
Well, the first thing that we're doing here in the southern Rocky Mountains, which generally includes western Colorado and part of northern New Mexico and a little bit of southern Wyoming, is that we're pushing on various legal sore points with the federal government, moving them towards developing a recovery plan. And we're pushing in a way that we haven't done heretofore. I've spent the last decade plus working with policymakers and scientists to build the scientific and policy case for wolves, and now we're moving forward with the legal arguments backed up by that good science. So, for example, this spring we filed a lawsuit against the National Park Service for a plan that they have finalized for Rocky Mountain National Park just to the northwest of Denver, the Denver-Boulder area. That plan deals with the management of elk, and it basically says that over the next couple of decades, they're going to kill hundreds of elk up to, you know, in thousands.
Why?
Every year in order to reduce the impact of elk on vegetation.
Because there's no predators that are dealing exactly. with elk in the park.
Though there are predators, there are no wolves.
Yeah.
And they, in fact, admitted that in their planning documents, that the root of the problem is the lack of the apex predator.
Yep.
And that they know what's going on in their sister park, Yellowstone, as far as the effect of wolves. But yet they then chose a politically safe, so if they thought it was a safe solution, which was to, instead of put wolves in, they put sharpshooters in.
So, Rob, I got to say, when I lived out there in Fort Collins, we used to regularly dress up in uniforms, Park Service and Forest Service uniforms, and we'd go up to Rocky Mountain National Park, set up a table in the parking. They have huge parking lots up there. We'd set up an information table, and we'd do surveys of the people coming through, and 90-95% of the people were in favor of reintroducing wolves. A lot of people actually thought that there were wolves in Rocky Mountain National Park,
mm-hmm.
but, you know, we'd say, no, there aren't any. We'd like to reintroduce them. We'd have 95% of the people in favor that they would come to the park more. And we told that to the businesses in town, and, you know, there was a lot of support for it. And here we are, you know, almost 20 years later, and the Park mm-hmm. Service is still dodging the issue. And, you know, they know what's right, but they just can't do it, you know.
Well, certainly not under the Bush administration.
No.
And hopefully if
maybe one of those wolves will go and bite Mr. Cheney, since he's very close to them.
Yeah.
I could even give them the direction.
Yes.
Well,
yes.
One of the things we did have when I was out there was a wanted poster with Cheney on it. And it had, I can't remember, who, Wallop was on there and Cheney and some other jerk from Wyoming.
Yeah, back when they were
the Three Stooges.
Senators and representatives
yep.
in Wyoming.
Yep, and, you know, we hated Cheney back then, you know, boy.
what in your view is the position of the Senator Tester? He has some quite interesting ideas about other things. Is he a supporter or is he an opponent?
You know, frankly, I don't know.
You don't know, okay.
I don't know.
I need to find out more about him and his agricultural bill ideas. So we'll
yeah,
see.
Yeah. The history of the kinds of folks who end up in Congress and the Senate from Western states in general hasn't been phenomenally good as far as the environment's concerned, though we've had a few exceptions, especially some of the early U-Dolls certainly blazed some trails as far as
and when I was out there for a while, Tim Wirth was our senator from Colorado, and he was great.
Mm-hmm.
There'd never be another one like him, probably. Although I hear that Colorado may go Democrat.
We'll see. We're certainly hoping that it will move away from the anti-environmental policies of the past.
Yeah, my arch nemesis was Hank Brown.
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Man. I harassed him nonstop when I was out there.
Indeed. So really what we need as far as support is for people to stay apprised of the issues that surround wolf recovery here in the West or even in the eastern United States, where wolf recovery is a hot topic as well, in Maine and the rest of the Northeast. You all need wolves there just as much as we need them here.
Right.
So visit the Wild Earth Guardians website at wildearthguardians.org. Or Google Sinapu or Google Wolves.
Sinapu.
Mm-hmm. And you'll get to the old Sinapu website, and that'll take you to Wild Earth Guardians. But stay involved. Sign up for an email action alert list. Donate. You know, the less time that we have to spend out there pounding the pavement, getting people to join our organization or to give us grants, the more time we can focus on doing the good work that people want us to be doing.
Right. All right. Well, we linked to your site on our blog. Folks want to check it out, just Google The Enviro Show. You'll find it there. Rob Edward, Carnivore Recovery Director for Wild Earth Guardians. Thanks so much, Rob.
Thank you. You guys take care.
Keep up the good work. Yeah.
Thanks a lot.
Yep.
Adios.
Bye.
Yeah, pretty exciting to hear.
Very exciting, but also
that group lives on.
Frightening,
right, Glenn?
Yeah.
Good work. All right, here in the Northeast is what brought this. We're now moving and phasing into the Enviro Show Echo Chamber, and what brought this issue to the fore here on our show was a Boston Globe story. From March 5th of this year. After 160 years, a wild gray wolf turns up in Massachusetts. A wild eastern gray wolf roamed western Massachusetts last fall before being shot to death on a farm, federal and state officials said. It was the first wolf confirmed in the state since hunters drove the species out more than 160 years ago. U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service officials said they used genetic tests to identify the animal, which was killed after it mauled more than a dozen lambs in Shelburne. Quote, to find a real one is pretty exciting, said Thomas Healy, special agent in charge of the agency's Northeast region. He said the animal probably came from Canada or the Great Lakes region, and that there is no indication the species is breeding in the state or in New England. Quote, but we don't know about this animal, what we don't know about this animal far outweighs what we do know, he said. While wildlife officials and naturalists are disappointed that the wolf is dead, they said the identification gives them hope that one day the species may reestablish itself in the thick, dark forest of the Northeast. They hope that. This is interesting.
They say their prayers at night.
Most other species wiped out in New England, such as moose, beaver, and deer, have rebounded, and some wildlife specialists say the return of the wolves would restore the balance to the ecosystem, possibly helping to hold in check soaring deer populations.
And coyote populations.
Indeed.
Yeah.
The discovery, and there was some coyote mauling of some, right here in East Hampton, I think, of some stock just yesterday or the day before. The discovery may lead to renewed calls for the government to help wolves regain a footing in the region by better protecting habitat or even reintroducing the animals. Yesterday's announcement coincided with controversy over the Bush administration's decision to take the populations of wolves off the federal endangered species list in the Northern Rockies and Western Great Lakes, an earlier government attempt to delist Northeast wolves by considering them part of the robust Great Lakes population, was turned back in court 5 years ago, and the species here remains fully protected.
What is this thing about Ipswich? You have something in there about Ipswich having wolves?
Yeah, but that's just like wolves that have been
a wolf
hurt.
Sanctuary.
Yeah, it's
all
a sanctuary.
Yeah.
So if you
I'm glad they're there anyway.
Yeah. So if you go to our blog and check out Wolf Hollow, you'll see a link to that, and you can go over to eastern part of the state and see some wolves. But moving on now, the Maine Wolf Coalition. We went to their website and pulled a little bit off of that. It says, for years, people in the Northeast have provided much of the public support for wolf recovery programs elsewhere. But until Restore, and that's Restore the North Woods, launched the North Woods Wolf Recovery Project in 92, the idea of wolves in our own backyard was just a wild dream. Now, after almost 10 years of public education and outreach, there is an exciting momentum to restore the howl of the wolf to the northern woods of Maine, New Hampshire, Vermont, and New York. For thousands of years, the eastern timber wolf lived throughout the forests of the Northeast, but in the 1600s, colonists began to clear the land for agriculture. In the process, wolves were cleared out, too. Wolf packs were shot, trapped, poisoned, and burned until the last wolf was driven from the region by the turn of the century. But as the economy of New England has changed, so has the land. And in the last 100 years, the forests have been regreening old pastures. Moose, deer, and beaver, once scarce, are recovering. So far, large tracts of remote forests have escaped threats of development in the Maine woods, the White Mountains of New Hampshire, Northeast Kingdom of Vermont, and the Adirondack State Park of New York. All this provides enough remote habitat with an abundant prey base, scarce human population, and low road density to support 1,000 to 2,000 wolves, mostly in the vast North Woods of Maine. And then further down it says, several public opinion polls have shown that the majority of citizens, and this touches on what Glenn was saying, believe that the wolf has the right to exist in this region. Over 200,000 people have signed petitions in support of the effort. Over 30 regional, local, and national conservation organizations have formed the Coalition to Restore the Eastern Wolf, acronym CREW. And once again, you can go to our blog and find the link to that. To coordinate research, education, and advocacy efforts. And in closing, it says, in response to the surge of public interest, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service has promised to begin developing a wolf recovery plan for the Northeast. The plan will create a blueprint for wolf restoration by identifying the tasks, agencies, and funding necessary for achieving recovery. However, the plan does not guarantee action. And if you're not tired of hearing my voice, yet as the wolf recovery movement builds momentum, there are bound to be detractors. Already opponents in New Hampshire and Maine have passed anti-wolf laws. Some people fear that wolves will attack their children, prey upon livestock, decimate deer. Others fear that laws protecting wolves will lock up the forest and they won't have any place to drive their ATVs and snowmobiles. Yeah. The truth is that there is not one good reason to fear the wolf. Experiences with wolf recovery in other parts of the country show that wolves do not pose any significant threat to people's livelihoods, pastimes, or safety. In fact, wolf recovery can benefit local economics by attracting ecotourism and increase the healthy prey of populations such as deer. And in closing, this year will be a critical time for all those concerned about the ecological health of the North Woods to take up the call for the wolf. The land is ready for the wolf's return, ready to reweave one more strand in the ecosystem that is the revival of the region's biodiversity. So check it out. You know, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service Northeast regional office is right here in Hadley.
Yeah, and they have had wolf programs there with the traveling wolf sanctuary. Comes in a bus called Mission Wolf. They're from Silver Cliff, Colorado.
Right. So they need to hear from you, our listeners, and they're located right behind Staples there on Route 9.
Yeah.
It's Westgate Center Drive. And call Paul Nickerson at U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, Hadley, Mass. Tell him you want to see wolves in the Northeast, or go over and knock on the door.
Yeah. Wolves in the Quabbin would be a good idea, I think. Yeah.
I'd go for that.
Yeah. That would be great.
All right. The only other thing I have is, were you going to say something?
No.
Is this deal with, this is also from the Maine Wolf Coalition, ruling Brighton's possibilities for wolf recovery in the Northeast. A federal judge has ordered the Bush administration to proceed with the business of restoring the wolf in the Northeast. Judge Garvin Murtha in the U.S. District Court for Vermont found the Department of Interior in violation of federal law in 2003 when it issued a rule saying no further efforts to restore the wolf were needed.
Good.
After successful restoration in Minnesota, Wisconsin, Michigan's Upper Peninsula, and the Northern Rockies, Fish and Wildlife Service was ready to sit back and consider their job done. And this is what Rob was talking about.
Yep.
Although wolves were now living in a small fraction of their historic range throughout the 48, the federal plan was to lump upper Midwest states together with the Northeast in a large 21-state region. The plan included delisting the wolf in the eastern part of the country, meaning that it would no longer be protected by the Endangered Species Act. In his decision, Judge Murtha ruled that Fish and Wildlife, quote, simply cannot delist or downlist an area that is previously determined warrants an endangered listing because it lumps together a core population with a low to non-existent population outside the area. And then in closing, the Fish and Wildlife Service complacency punctuated by the attitude that there is nothing in the law that says the service has a responsibility to recover species everywhere it once occurred indicates a certain penchant for mediocrity. Execution of its duties, mediocrity in the execution of its duties. Oh, who would have think it? A government agency?
No,
mediocracy?
No way.
And it finally says, other than the few existing areas where there has been successful wolf recovery, the Northeast is probably the last remaining place that can even entertain the thought of restoring wolves to their former range.
Yeah.
So, there it is.
We got the forest. We got the prey base. Yep. And I think population would support it as well.
For sure.
Yep.
All right, that's the echo chamber. Now, the only other thing I was going to do in the echo chamber was this news from Al Gore, but I think you have him on tape.
I have a bunch of clips from his speech last week, which was really a excellent speech. So let's play a few clips. This take a few minutes, but I took out some of the highlights, okay?
Ladies and gentlemen, there are times in the history of our nation when our very way of life depends upon dispelling illusions and awakening to the challenge of a present danger. In such moments, we are called upon to move quickly and boldly and shake off complacency, throw aside old habits, and rise clear-eyed and alert to the necessity of making big changes. Those who, for whatever reason, refuse to do their part in such times must either be persuaded to join the effort or asked to step aside. This is such a moment. The survival of the United States of America as we know it is at risk, and even more, if more should be required, the future of human civilization is at stake.
Now, you know, I thought that was pretty close to our theme song, It's the End of the World as We Know It, but I don't know if he was copying that or not, but let me play a couple more clips.
Our dangerous over-reliance on carbon-based fuels is at the core of all three of these challenges, the economic, environmental, and national security crises. We're borrowing money from China to buy oil from the Persian Gulf to burn it in ways that destroy the planet. Every bit of that has to change.
That was a big crowd pleaser.
Right.
So, if we grab hold of that common thread and pull it hard, all of these complex problems begin to unravel, and we find that we're holding the answer to all of them right in our hand. The answer is to end our reliance on carbon-based fuels. In fact, we can start right now using solar power, wind power, and geothermal power to make electricity for our homes and businesses. So today, I challenge our nation to commit to producing 100% of our electricity from renewable energy and truly clean carbon-free sources within 10 years.
Yeah, so that was his big his big point there.
That was it.
Within 10 years, no more carbon-based electrical production.
But that's nothing like that is ever going to happen.
Oh, that's what my son said. He's only 14. I said, you're way too young to be so cynical. That's for me to be. So, and here's one more little clip.
But even those who reap the profits of the carbon age have to recognize the inevitability of its demise. As one OPEC oil minister observed, the Stone Age didn't end because of a shortage of stones.
Yeah, I thought that was pretty good.
That's pretty good.
Yeah.
He's like Superman's father, Jor-El.
Yeah.
He's Gor-El.
Gor-El. Yeah.
The world is ending. His hair's on fire. But check it out. Go to his website, wecansolveit.org, and check out what he said.
It's about a half-hour speech. Really good. Excellent. You know, he's a great speaker, a great speech writer, and, you know, pretty radical proposal.
It
really
is. Yep. For a sort of mainstream politician,
well,
it's amazing.
It would be radical if he would say that we have got to change the market system under which everything is distributed, which is where these people have turned everything in our lives and everything in the planet into commodities that they use to make profits for them.
Right.
And money will never replace the environment.
Yep.
Right.
And until we get to that point, nothing is going to happen. I mean, it's like this carbon trading thing. That is just total nonsense.
Definitely.
But it's determined by people going back to the free market, the so-called free market as the distribution center, and it doesn't work.
Yeah. If he had said that, they would have written him
if
right off.
If he'd said that would have been case, right? That would have been something I'd like to hear
from
him.
Yeah, right.
But you're not going to hear anything like that from him.
No.
Oops.
So what was that?
That was a phone call.
All right. Should we do a little Darth Chaney? Suddenly very cold in here.
Here comes Darth Chaney.
Glenn, help us.
Oh,
when's
my.
It going to be over?
Well, according to the official backwards Bush countdown timer, we have 181 days, 4 hours, 39 minutes, and 40 seconds at the buzzer. It still seems like a lot.
It is a lot.
181 days to survive.
They can dig up the whole Gulf of Mexico and half of the rest of the world by that time.
They can drill their way out of it, right?
Yeah, the scam within the scam within the scam.
Yeah.
Drill our way out of it. So Bush says that he'll lift the ban on offshore drilling signed by his father.
Yeah.
This is like, what do you call it? Something like that. It's like,
I am your father, Luke.
Of course, that goes nowhere because the congressional ban, thankfully, still holds. And Barbara Boxer and Nancy Pelosi are digging in their heels, thankfully. But keep your eye on that one. Did you catch the emperor's farewell joke at the G8?
Right, yeah, just a little off-the-cuff humor.
He says he's joking to his fellow leaders. Goodbye from the world's biggest polluter. That was his goodbye.
Yeah.
But people did not laugh.
No.
People did not laugh.
They were aghast.
Yep.
But we have to start thinking about what these people in this great G8 group talk about when they're by themselves and what they're really saying to each other. And the people are beginning to act. I mean, some of the newspapers in Europe are beginning to act as if Obama is now going to be the president and we don't have to worry about this guy anymore. But that's wrong. 189 days? Good.
181. Don't exaggerate.
Okay.
It's not that bad, really.
Okay.
Yeah, it is.
You know, we probably should say something about the landfill sort of symposium they had.
Yeah, I wanted to go to that, but I knew I shouldn't because I would have gotten in trouble. I wouldn't have been able to keep my mouth shut.
Because of your official position?
Yeah, you know, I have to be somewhat circumspect about how much I say in public, although, hey, I'm on the air, right? So, but anyway, you know, in person it would have been a different story. I just can't go to those kinds of things and listen to those consultants, biostitutes, geostitutes. I can't listen to them lie to the people. So I didn't go. And
right.
After reading the news article, I'm glad I didn't go because I would have lost it.
Well, the Daily Hampshire Gazette went, and just take a few excerpts out of their piece. Experts differ over landfill expansion effect on well. Two environmental scientists who were the centerpiece of a landfill expansion forum Tuesday night reached dramatically different conclusions about what might happen should the city of Northampton move ahead with plans to add to its Glendale Road facility. Peter Shannon, a professor at MIT and a consulting engineer from Northampton, used his 30-minute presentation to explain a containment transport model designed to test the impact the proposed expansion would have on the Maloney Well, a backup drinking supply for East Hampton. The model found that the flow of several chemicals, including biochemical, oxygen chemicals, magnesium, zinc, methylene, chloride, and a theoretical containment would be below dangerous detection levels. Quote, the results show that essentially nothing will reach the Maloney Well, he said. On the other hand, Robert M. Newton, a geologist and professor at Smith College, who is also a member of the Barnes Aquifer Protection Advisory Committee, found in his model that the concentration of similar chemicals at individual wells in and around the landfill was increased significantly. He said that taking steps to protect the drinking water should be the city's top priority, and that the cost of the landfill will be borne by future generations. Quote, the landfill represents a liability. It is a large liability, he said. Clean water is our most precious natural resource, and we can no longer take it for granted. About 2 years ago, the Department of Public Works received a special waiver from the State Department of Environmental Protection for the expansion. Jesus. The city sought the waiver because the area of the expansion lies over a drinking water recharge area.
Oh, my. Huh. Good place to put your garbage and toxic waste, isn't it?
Of the Barnes Aquifer, which feeds the Mahoney Well. The well became the focus of Tuesday's forum, specifically whether the landfill expansion would have a negative impact on the municipal drinking water supplies in East Hampton on private residential wells in nearby Brookston Street.
So, you know, what's your definition of insanity? Is it like burying your garbage over your water supply? You know, the reason why the dump is there is because it used to be a gravel pit, right? And, you know, and that was a convenient place to fill. You know, that's what they called it, a landfill. So there's a gravel pit there. They started dumping their trash there. They used to burn it. And, you know, then they couldn't burn it anymore because of the air quality regulations. And so now they bury it. And you know.
And sand and gravel love to filter stuff, right?
Yeah. It just passes right through like, you know, a sieve. So right, you know, I mean, the one geologist is talking about, or engineer, whatever he is, talking about how it's not going to affect the Maloney Well. Meanwhile, I mean, this is an aquifer, you know. It's not just one well, it's burying your trash in your water. You know, garbage juice, basically, is what you're drinking. Yeah, I mean, it's complete insanity. And, you know, I'm sorry, I'm not usually so pessimistic, am I? But,
oh,
I mean, no, what's the, I mean, what is the definition of doom when you're burying your trash in your water? I mean, would they honestly say that they should just go out and dump trash in the Quabbin Reservoir? No, because that's going to Boston. But, mm-hmm. you know, here it mm-hmm. is.
Well, the other part of it is that, I mean, given what we've raised people's consciousness about the shortage of water in the world and the fight to keep it in public hands.
Yeah.
And here they're destroying what there is left of the water in the area.
That's right.
It's a madhouse.
It is. And this, you know, this is something where the people should rise up and get these politicians, get them out of there.
Rise up, people. People of Northampton.
Just get rid of these idiots who are currently planning the destruction of our water supplies, and get some people in there who have some vision. Yes. You know, that's what has to happen.
All right, we're running out of time here. I want to remind people that Saturday, August 2nd, Stop the War in Iran, mass march in New York City. Go to stopwarinIran.org. Saturday, August 9th, noon, Valley Free Radio celebrating its third birthday. Benefit music at Look Park. Check that out.
Yeah, be there.
And Friday, August 16th, surround the federal building in Springfield. No war on Iran. Okay, we are almost out of time, so...
I was going to tell you about how the European Commission raided the business giants, but I'll tell you next week.
All right.
You can put it up
back
on the blog. See you in 2 weeks.
And what are we going out with?
We're going out with the Wolves.
Oh, yes, the Wolves.
It's Dio saying adios. Next up is...
And the radio is coming up. We'll be back in 2 weeks. Next week at this time will be Farm to Fork, our sister show.
Good night, Gene.
And this is Glenn saying see ya. And here we're going out with some Wolves. Ha ha ha!